Hello, everyone, and welcome to another fantastically tainty St. Paddy's Day episode of the Black Tower Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Andrew, your Bajan Mahil.
I am another of your hosts, Daniel, your Amin Khan Mahil, and we are joined in spirit by our third host, Joshua, our Soroven Mahil. He is off drinking and being very merry with his family today, and we wish him all well with his absolutely amazing food and drink and friends, all of which I don't have.
So we'll talk more about it here relatively shortly, but for today we have actually replaced Josh. If you haven't already guessed that from the show notes below, if you're just listening to the podcast, or the description below if you're watching on YouTube, or, you know, if you're in our live chat on our Discord and can actually exactly already see, at least by name, who our replacement for today is, or not ours, Josh's replacement. You couldn't replace Josh.
Yes.
But we'll talk more about our fantastic guest here shortly, or better yet, let our fantastic guest talk about themselves here in just a moment. But if you want to be able to get these sneak peeks, you know, 3 minutes before you see it in the video of who our guest is, or just listen to episodes that don't have anything edited out because we can't edit live. I'm not that good. Yet. I mean, I have a I have the censor button, so I can do that, but it only censors me and not anybody else. So it's very biased. I'm very offended by it, actually.
You should be.
What if I could just hit it and censor everybody talking at the same time? I'd probably just hold it down indefinitely. But
that'd be mean and also hilarious.
But if you want to see a schedule of when we're doing these recordings and when you can see it, and when you can expect the episodes to go live, make sure that you head on over to blacktowerpod.com, and there's a calendar of events there. Our 5 most recent YouTube videos are there on a playlist for you to watch there if you want, as well as I believe it's the 5 most recent podcast episodes. There's forums where you can join Sexy Morshadi and running naked through them. No pictures required. Please don't post them. I'm sure that you're all very fantastic and beautiful, and you know I fully support that.
Don't kink shame.
But no, I don't. It's not an 18 plus site. We got to put up warnings and stuff. We do that. That's just too much work. It takes us long enough to make edits to the website as it is.
You're not wrong.
But where you can create little forums and talk about whatever you want in regards to Wheel of Time, the podcast, tangents, funny stories, things we made you think of, whatever, kind of go wild. And if we don't like it, we'll tell you whenever we notice, like 3 years later, because I am bad at noticing stuff. You can also find quick links to our merch shops, both ours with Spreadshirt and the one with New Creations by Jen, which you'll hear more about later on, as well as links to our Patreon, where you can get in on the ground-ish floor of some pretty cool stuff that's coming up. I've seen some pretty much final drafts of some really dope stuff that's coming that patrons will get to enjoy today. So, well, you won't get to enjoy it today, but I saw it. I'm going to stop talking. It's a long enough plug. Daniel.
Once you're done with going to Black Tower Podcast, make sure that you pop on over to our lovely and illustrious sponsor, who's been the longest standing sponsor of the Black Tower Podcast, Miss The Crystal Barista. She has a Twitter, which is @TheCrystalBarista. On there, you can also find her on Facebook at facebook.com/rockpick. That is rock pick, like pickaxe, not like picture. She's got some really cool stuff. Keep Josh busy with her subscription boxes, which are also all pretty fun. She's also got deals on, you know, just very pretty things to get, jewelry that she's made and gotten made by other people and things like that, as well as all of your needs for, you know, crystal healing, different things like that as well. So definitely go over, say hi, take a look at what she's got, and buy lots of stuff so that we can keep having really awesome Gathering Madnesses.
Yep. And eventually we'll have a pre-done plug for that, so only patrons will have to sit there and listen to us ramble about plugs in the future. That might be 3 years from now. We'll probably get it about the same time we get Josh's leg shave video from December. Shade. So shade. Much shade. But without further ado, we have made them wait long enough. We would like to definitely introduce our amazing guest, the fantastic Morgan from Podcast of the Dragon. Say hi and tell the people about what you do and yourself and, well, whatever you want, really.
Hi, I'm Morgan. I host Podcast of the Dragon, which is, I guess I call it an empathy-driven podcast with a topical literary analysis bent, which sounds super fucking pretentious, but I say fuck a lot. I like to spend a lot of time thinking about how the characters are thinking and feeling and what's going on while they're doing what they're doing. And so I do character studies. I focus on relationships. I look at different scenes. So it's kind of like lit papers that I'd write in high school, except I put a lot more work into it and it's a lot more fun. I got into
why you didn't have amazing fun doing lit papers in high school.
Well, I mean, I fucked off a lot, but you know, I definitely didn't do nearly the effort. Yeah, I don't know. I got into the Wheel of Time. I was an angsty teenage girl and my mom sent me she gave
me my hair is not long enough to do this.
my mother.
I've got like the Tobey Maguire emo.
Here, mine is all like nice and clean. I was a teenager in high school. I was 14, and my mother came to me the day after Christmas and was like, you know, I forgot to give you a Christmas present. And I was convinced that she had waited an extra day to give me my Nintendo, so it would be such an amazing surprise. And she handed me the Eye of the World instead, and I was just thinking, what is this bullshit? I was really let down, and I saw, you know, the cheesy cover art on it, and I was just like, I was so disappointed, so unimpressed, and I just threw it on my nightstand in a sulk, and I left it there for a year, and I read it the following year because I was bored, and I've been a Watt fanatic for a whole, how long ago was that? It's been almost 30 years. It's been a long, long, long time. And I would not have guessed as that angsty teenager that I'd be doing shit like this in my 40s. Yet here I am in the future. So
yet here you are.
Yes.
And we're glad you're here.
Right on.
Who knew that one day of disappointment would lead to a lifetime of fanaticism?
Right. If that had been that Nintendo, it would have been so lame. So yeah, this is much, much better.
Yeah,
I mean, you might be doing a podcast now about like Mario or some shit.
But how many of those are there? And I just enough. I don't know. Yeah, I don't enough. Think it would have been as cool.
Now I'm curious, and I actually want to know: are there
how many podcasts are there about Nintendo characters?
I was looking at Mario. Okay, there's a few.
A lot.
Some of these aren't like. There's only one called The House of Mario, but it's a full-on Nintendo podcast. Super Mario Bros. Minute. Anyway, enough. I'm not free plugging those people. No, it's not happening.
No.
All right. So, Daniel, what are we talking about today? Besides Wheel of Time, because so, I swear somewhat, to creator, if you just say Wheel of Time.
We're talking about the Wheel of Time and implications. No, we have our wonderful guest here to talk with us, as she said, about characters and relationships, and more so even than that, to pare it down even a little further, since we've done so many fucking relationship shows. We are talking about communication in the Wheel of Time. What works, what doesn't work, some of the best communicators in the books, some of the worst communicators in the books, and, you know, all of the different ways and sort of themes in which people talk in and around Randland to each other, and all of the implications therein about why there are so many problems and things like
that. I was about to make a reference, but luckily I magically remembered we haven't done the spoiler warning yet. So yeah. With the topic in mind, before we start spoiling all things Wheel of Time, let's listen from some people that are very, very experienced with the Wheel of Time. And we have internet proof that they have literally read every single word of the pages.
This episode contains spoilers from the entire Wheel of Time series. If you have not read the series, you are at risk of being spoiled.
You have been warned.
If you don't recognize those voices, go and educate yourself. Get some audiobooks.
Before you wreck yourself. Yeah.
After you finish listening to the episode, if you're driving or in your car or wherever right now, go throw on one of the Wheel of Time audiobooks and you'll be like, hey, I've heard those voices. So, yeah, the reference I was going to make was Gawain's biggest problem with communication is he misunderstood that song, if you like it, then you better put a ring on it. And he thought that if he put more rings on, he would be more successful. So he puts on
the three. The other problem is that he misunderstood who he's supposed to put the ring on. Because apparently he just likes himself.
To be fair, I think that was probably like... It was probably a very fortunate like misunderstanding on his part if that was the case.
I don't know. I feel like Egwene could have handled it better. Just saying.
I mean... I wonder what would one of those rings actually do to a Chandler? There's an idea for another segment. Not a whole episode.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could talk about that for a whole hour. I could say the same thing about it for like a whole hour. Anyway. All right. So the ever criticized. What?
Just say duck sauce is the worst for an hour.
I could
say that for
an hour. Duck sauce packing boy. All right. So for fans of the book series and everything, it's always been a thing that we kind of talk about that the communicate that so much. And we do this with all kinds of fantasy and cartoons and stuff. Like, they could have fixed and avoided this problem so much easier if they just talked. And there's the obvious response of, well, if they actually just talked and they finished the problem in 5 minutes instead of an hour and a half movie or a 14 book series, then we wouldn't have so much to be fans of. So yeah, concede that point, whatever, don't care.
Well, and of course, the other important point of that is real people don't actually sit down and talk about things and communicate well enough either. So it's not real if everybody in your book just like sits down and goes, all right, let's talk this out, solve our problem, and then we don't go to war. And then it's like, humans don't do that like 9 times out of 10. But again, still, point stands that like, if you're sitting there reading the book, you definitely go, Jesus fucking Christ, could you talk to Moraine for a second and not have these problems?
I mean, at this point, it seems like it's more meme-y for us to like poke fun at and make fun of it, at least for those of us that didn't just finish the books or aren't just, you know, in the middle of one of those sections of failures to communicate or whatever. I know for me, like whenever I talk about it, like, yeah, it actually is a problem. But I'm more so just like making fun of it. I don't want to say ironically because that sounds far too hipster for me. But it's just like, it's more of like a fun jab at something that is a known issue. But I kind of don't necessarily hate it because the miscommunications give us plenty of funny scenes. They give us plenty of scenes where we just want to reach through the pages and punch Duck Sauce Packet Boy in the face or Rand or, you know, really anybody, honestly. Except for Lon, because he would punch back. That would hurt. Worst paper cut of your life. But yeah, so we proposed this idea to Morgan, like a month ago?
Up at your house and punches you in the face.
Yeah, something like that, back in February.
There was actually a little bit of forethought into what the topic would be. Not what we would actually talk about, but at least what the topic was. Because communication, obviously, it has a ton of parallels for our lives in the real world. You know, being able to talk about problems, you know, like Daniel mentioned earlier, the fact that nobody does that and more people should. And I like to think that I try to, but there's plenty of times where I don't do that and I should. So how do we want to start this? Do we want to like just kind of go through categories of like the most annoying times where communication failed, the funniest times, like, or is it just talk about whatever you want and... I mean, I know that is it in the end, but
maybe talk about an overall theme, because I think that it's probably part of just a general habit of the boomer generation that they don't talk to each other and they don't talk about stuff, which is why, you know, like a lot of them stayed married because you were supposed to, but how many of their marriages were just people not talking to each other and dad being super stoic and mom being quiet and frustrated and kids growing up in, you know, quiet households, but nobody spoke about what's going on. I mean, my mother grew up in a household with, you know, a Korean War vet and a wife that kind of devolved into just chaos and dysfunction that probably would have been solved if people had talked to each other. But it was like, you know, men don't discuss their feelings, women don't communicate with men because men don't understand. And so I think a lot of that he kind of structured it that way, partly because that was very much what he knew and understood. And a lot of the premise of the book is that everything would be better if it weren't like that.
All right, guys. Well, as we all know here at the Black Tower podcast, not everything that is touched by the shadow is lost. And that is totally true for thegreatblight.com. Now, Nablus and his team have done an amazing job of going ahead and putting this together, and it is possibly the greatest resource for those of us here in the Wheel of Time community. First off, you have this awesome homepage with posts from a bunch of your favorites. Go and find, you can go and check out new things that you've never seen before, keep up to date on content creators that you already follow, and just go ahead and dip as many of your toes or your entire foot as you want into all of the different things that are going on. Now, also here, there is probably the best list of content creators. There's YouTubers, podcasters, artists, musicians, just about everything you could want. And if you don't see your favorite content creator there, that's fine. There is an application included in the site to go ahead and make sure that your favorite content creator is part of it. Just encourage them to fill out the application and Nablus will be in touch. Now, after you've gone ahead and checked that out, you're going to want to pop over to the ever-expanding library here at The Great Blight, because it is something particularly special. Now, I don't know how many times I've gone ahead and joined a fandom only to find out halfway through my first read, looking up a character, that they die in the second to last book, which sucks. It always is very disappointing when you can't look up anything interesting about what you've read for fear of things that you haven't read yet. But they've fixed the problem over at thegreatblight.com. It is a spoiler-free wiki. That's right. That means that if you've only read up to Path of Daggers and you really want to find out what in the world you missed about Egwene because there's something you just don't understand, or if you want to get more information about Rand because you think he's super cool, you don't need to read past Path of Daggers, and it's not going to ruin you on A Memory of Light before you've gotten there. You'll know exactly where to stop. You'll know exactly where you are. And once you're done with that, make sure that you go ahead and help the site out, the content creators out, everything like that, with the beta nature of it. Up here at the top, you're going to see a problem, have a suggestion button. That is specifically for if you have any issues with the site or if you have any feedback. It's only something that we can make better with feedback and with help from the community. So come on down, check it out. Grab a couple of our videos or grab a couple of our podcasts, and we'd love to see you there.
Well, and if only Rand were here, he would know what to say to her.
Right? Well, and I love how, you know, here, Jet, you brought up such a good point that, you know, throughout history, humans have sort of needed in some ways to define things. Gender roles, different things like that, because there was actually, there have been times in human history where it makes sense for X to happen rather than Y. But we're very much in a different time now. And even though the world isn't perfect by any stretch of the imagination, and there is still absolutely, you know, this inequality here and that inequality there and different things that still sort of need, and I put need in so many quotes, to be a certain way, you know, we're moving away from that into people get to choose how things are. And we still have such a problem of like, no, man up, dude. Like, really? Really? Man up? That's what we're gonna say. Like, you can't cry at this movie that you actually have lots of feelings about because you gotta be a man, or like, you know, no, you can't play with Legos. You're a girl. Like, no, fucking let her play with Legos. And so we're still dealing with the like aftershocks of all of that stuff. And so I feel very much for the characters in Wheel of Time that, you know, they're built on a foundation. They're absolutely built in a world that, you know, has certain expectations on them, that has certain things that they're supposed to do, certain things they're not supposed to do. And these, you know, the Emmonsfield Five especially get thrown completely out of that,
mm-hmm.
and are just asked to do lives that are infinitely different than they thought they were going to. And so the fact that they get it wrong more often than not is so frustratingly understandable. Because you're sitting there being like, Nynaeve, I swear to God, if you tell one more of the boys that they're not allowed to do something with a girl because they're not old enough, I will hit you. Look at what they're around. Look at where they are right now. Look at what they're doing and understand. But at the same time, you're like, Nynaeve's like 22 years old, been like living under the women's circle for fucking 22 years. Of just being beat into her how women are supposed to act and how men are supposed to act. And you're like, all right, you don't get a pass, but like, I get you.
Well, if you have a structure of how things are supposed to be, and it's like, if you're living in that structure or those constraints and there's nothing going wrong where you have to be adaptive, then it's like, okay. I mean, except that nobody's really happy about that. Like, one of the things that, like, I don't think that the prologue Ravens is a good prologue, but I think it's great to look at the character of Egwene before she was like, I have to get the fuck out of the Two Rivers, because he writes her looking at Two Rivers gender roles even as a little kid and being like, oh, the women are all dressed up like for a feast day and it's hot as balls and the guys get to walk around with their shirts all unlaced. That's bullshit. And I want to cut my hair because it's too hot and my mom won't let me. That's bullshit. And so it's a lot of Egwene walking around thinking this is bullshit, you know, and things shouldn't have to be the way that they are just because reasons, and kind of the foundation.
And back to the topic. Meryn and Bran Alvear would go ahead and beat your ass.
Right.
Yeah. So back to the topic, because the topic isn't like gender roles and gender stereotypes and expectations in the Wheel of Time. We have these things that go across the entire kind of series where we have these moments where, like we said earlier, that if people would just talk, it would be so much simpler. Where like one of the earlier ones that sticks out to me is where for a while, Rand and Egwene are like, yeah, I saw myself being married to you whenever all I knew was Amon's Field. But now I've seen other people and literally anybody else would be a better fit for me than you. And they both kind of feel not necessarily that extreme, but they both feel, I mean, we can see obviously that wasn't necessarily always right. But, and it takes them so long to have the conversation, and it comes to a head from one side whenever Elaine finally has this conversation with Egwene that, hey, I kind of get that y'all were betrothed where you're from, but I really like him. And Egwene is just like, oh, we can freely talk. Yeah, I don't care. I'm not into him. Yeah, let's go tell him. Let's go break his heart and tell him. And then she does. And then Rand's like, oh, thank God. I wanted to say to you. She's like, wait a minute. What the fuck? Wait, no. I get to say this. This
was all okay when I was bringing up with you.
Yeah.
But you.
Oh, but he was going to be a chicken shit and just be like, oh, I'm a monster who can channel, you know, I'll just hide behind that and never actually tell her so she can just pine and be sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they finally do. I mean, and you get that moment of hilarity where it's like, you know, that kind of classical sitcom thing, like where people have been avoiding this conversation forever because they don't want to hurt the other person's feelings, but both people are feel like the same way.
Yeah.
And so like that's one of them that that jumps out kind of earlier on in the series to me. Yeah.
Rand to me has all of the best ones, which granted, I mean, he gets a fuck ton of screen time. So it's not super surprising that a lot of sort of my favorite ones would definitely be with Rand. But I also love the almost any exchange that Avienda and Rand have after she's made into his teacher for the Aiel. Because, again, Avienda is a terrible teacher for him in terms of the fact that she is another one of those people who is, like...
trying to convince herself that she hates his guts?
Just for starters. Like, first and foremost, she's a terrible teacher for him because she just found out that she loves him without really getting a choice in the matter.
It's like elementary school playground. Like, I really like you, so I'm going to punch you in the throat.
And, like, her response to Rand not knowing something about the Aiel is, how do you not know this? This is common sense. And he's like, not where I'm from! It's not common sense for me! And so, like, 90% of their communication is just Rand being like, oh yeah, so X. And her going, you are the biggest idiot for thinking X. It's definitely Y, you stupid sheep herder. And him going, it's always been X. My whole life it's been X. Why are you telling it's Y? And like half the time he's really trying, where he's like, could be Y, but I'm going to say X. And then she punches him in the face and you're like, great communication.
Yeah, their relationship is pure comedy. Well, it's really realistic too, because it's sort of like, you know, people don't communicate because they're dancing around with each other's feelings. It's like, yes. Egwene doesn't tell Rand that her feelings have changed, partly because she's not even communicating with herself. And there's so much reality to that. If people don't want to admit things to themselves, people don't want to admit things to each other. And then it's like, Elaine really likes Rand, and she's just like hinting at it because that's totally the type of thing that people do. And so there's all of this like dancing around. And then
she stops hinting at it and writes him two letters that are completely opposite.
Oh,
and
but now he's
even more
confused. But that's so realistic real, too. It's so I realistic. And everybody hates it. It's sort of like, I don't know. I find their relationship the most realistic in so many ways, because she didn't have a vision. She just like imprinted on him. And it's like, I don't know. There was a boy that came in eighth grade that I crushed on so hard because he was so different than all of the other boys. And so I can totally get her just thinking about him constantly. And it's juvenile, but at the same time, it's like so real. And so it's like, I get where she's coming from, and then feeling like, oh, he doesn't want to see me anymore. He's been making out with me for 4 days, and I tell him that I'm leaving, and he's just like, after I've written this letter where I've been really like basically skirting the edge of hitting the like L word, not that L word, you know? And it's like, I'm in total lesbians with you, and you know, I'll get lesbians with you, you know, as long as you want to be my boyfriend, you know. It's like, and then he's like, you know, totally relieved because she's leaving and won't be in danger. But it never occurs to her that he would even think about that. And so then she's just crushed, and she's like, okay, well, I needed to just takesy backsies a little bit because I don't want to sound like such an asshole. And then she makes herself even more of an asshole. And then she second guesses herself and decides that probably wasn't the smartest thing to do. I did it in an impulsive moment. And yeah, it's great.
Well, and then I'm going to constantly tell my friends to tell him that I meant every word.
This is ninth grade all over again. But Jesus Christ.
It's so high
school. The thing about that is she was going to tell Egwene, tell him I meant what I said in the first letter, except that Egwene got snatched out of Tel Iron Riyadh by a meese before she got to say the first letter, because she was, you know, trespassing after she had promised she wouldn't go in. So she didn't get to say that part, in which case then Egwene says to Avienda, tell Rand that Elaine meant what she said in her letters. And then at that point, it's like this game of telephone where they don't even have all of the information. And then Avienda is telling him all the time, you know, don't you love Elaine? She has great tits. She's got a nice ass. Didn't she let you see? And he's like, no, I haven't seen a girl naked. What are tits? You know? And then it's like, yeah. Yeah.
Oh no, I've definitely seen titties. And I've definitely put my penis in. I can't read my own writing.
Vagina. Vagina. Yeah. It was like, I can just picture the like hilarious moment where Avin is like, you should really be focused on Elaine. You know, she really meant what she put in her letter. And Rand's just like, which fucking one?
Yeah. Yeah, she says, yeah, she's like, two letters she poured her heart out into, you know, into them. And he's like, she meant what, thinking to himself, she meant what she said in both her letters, because that's flat out impossible. And so he's just even more confused. And yeah, it's like,
which one did she write last? Hey,
if Matt was here, he'd definitely know. He'd be able to make sense of what both letters meant.
I love it later on, like after Perrin's married and they're like, he kind of switches and like focuses more on Perrin. Is like, Perrin's married. He understands women. And it's like, no, none of you do. Perrin, nobody understands like, anybody.
The worst.
Except Moraine. Moraine understands everybody.
Perrin's communication issues are mostly his own fault. But Perrin makes use of his sense of smell to take responsibility for his wife's feelings, so she doesn't get a chance to take responsibility for her own crazy and be like, I'm feeling crazy and I'm going to mentally process these feelings and act in a reasonable fashion, because he's smelling everything she's feeling and going around trying to put out her emotional fires, and she's like, what the fuck? And then she's even madder about it, and he's like, I don't know why she's mad.
Perrin's just like, why does Fael smell like ozone? There's a storm coming. And yeah. Fael's just like smiling at him, you know, trying to be a nice, caring girlfriend slash fiance slash wife at whatever point. And I mean, ultimately, I think she kind of just figures out that he's that how to some extent he's able to tell like kind of how she's feeling. And I could see how that's frustrating. Like there's many times where I've been really, really pissed at people for different reasons. But I don't want them to know that I'm pissed, because it doesn't do anything. It doesn't make anything better. So I'm like, I'll be pissed for a bit, then I'm cool. But she doesn't get that ability, because Perrin is always like, you're mad. I can tell. And she
Why are you so angry?
Yeah. It's like, you know, I have lots of crazy emotions. You know, I'm bipolar, so I have lots of crazy feelings. And so I spend a lot of time being like, is this reasonable? Is it fair? And just kind of keeping that all inside. So if I were married to some shithead like him, I would have to kill him, because I just sort of be like, you're taking responsibility for my crazy, and that's not okay. You know, I should
be able too much.
Yeah.
Well, I will say that again. I mean, like, let me preface this very importantly by, I like Perrin more than Fael. Yes. That does not mean I like Perrin. I actually think that Perrin has so many issues, but I do like Perrin more than Fael. And I definitely think that that is such a two-way street of like, dude, how do you always know how I feel? Like, she never actually asks the question and he never offers the answer. So both of them are like so in the wrong for the communication, because yes, it's not his responsibility to take credit for her crazy. It's also not her responsibility to take all of his self-deprecating, because Jesus fucking Christ, their relationship, like each of them just has so much problem with each one. But it's also definitely like, if one of them just brought it up, it doesn't need to be Perrin, it doesn't need to be Fael. If just fucking one of them was like, so I've noticed that you can seem to know what I'm feeling. Or if Perrin was like, so, fun fact, I smell things real good, and I know how you feel.
They spend the whole
time. Then they could actually have a real conversation about it, and it wouldn't be Fael being like, I swear to God, if Berylaine walks in this room one more time, I will murder him and her both and make it look like an accident.
Well, they spend the whole time trying to take the burden of the other's issues. Like, I will handle your damages because I love you and I want to take care of you. And all it does is they interpret it wrong. They miss, like, not that you can even handle somebody else's burdens, but they add the other, what they think the other person's burdens are, onto themselves, which just compounds their own damages.
Especially when they're wrong.
And then your wife gets snatched and, you know, freaking runs off, not runs off, but gets snatched off into the snow. And then we get Fael Gate, and just nobody has a great time.
Fael Gate!
Freaking, like, there's only one scene that I'm hoping that actually doesn't make it into the show, and that's it. And it's just a very long scene. Like, maybe succinct it down to, like, a day.
It's like, he tells her about his sense of hearing and his sight, but he never tells anybody about his sense of smell, because being able to smell people's emotions is, like, a level of, you know, Oh, yes, it's dark. It's like so.
Yeah, it's
he tells one person.
It's channely and it's dark friendly. Yeah.
Hello, everyone. Everyone loves merchandise. Whatever it's about, it's people love to get it for whatever reason, for holidays, for birthdays, for Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa presents, whatever kind of thing. Why not give you another place to where you can go and get some awesome merch? Popular for all kinds of different reasons, this is New Creations by Jen. It's an amazing shop where you can find all sorts of Wheel of Time inspired merch. It's also the only place where you can go and join the Frosty Mug Society. To give an example, our own Black Tower podcast, Frosty Mug, is a part of the Frosty Mug Society. Now, there are a total of 6, as of the time that I'm talking now, Frosty Mugs in the Frosty Mug Society on New Creations by Jen. And those span several different content creators from the Wheel of Time content creator community. You can go and get the Black Tower podcast one, Malkier Talks, Talk Around Riyadh, The Will Reads, The Will Weaves, and of course, Weekly Will News. All 6 of those content creators, again, including us, have Frosty mugs, and they all look super dope. Jen does an amazing job. So make sure you go and get one and join the Frosty Mug Society. Beyond the mugs, there are the Frosty mugs. There are regular mugs that you can get. There are t-shirts that you can get with all kinds of different designs on them that are inspired or by the content creator platform suggestions they've sent in, or just overall Wheel of Time inspired items. You can find menswear, ladieswear, unisex wear, hats, all kinds of really dope stuff. Now, if you don't want to just get content creator based stuff and you want more just Wheel of Time inspired stuff, make sure you check out Weekly Will News's section of New Creations by Jen. And that's where you can find all things from Gator Shufas to Out There Forms tees to dice cups and die to coasters to just everything that we have seen Rob with Weekly Will News put out over forever. And you can find it here under the Weekly Will News on New Creations by Jen. This is an epic site that is only overshadowed by how epic the items and the owners are. Again, Rob and Jen put in a ton of work. They work really well together and really well with the creators that want to be a part of this. So it's fantastic. So make sure you head on over to newcreationsbyjen.com and get yourself your very own Black Tower Podcast Frosty Mug. And while you're there, make sure you pick up anything from the vast assortment of Wheel of Time inspired merchandise.
Tells Ingtar, and Ingtar says, don't fucking tell anybody how you smell. Just tell them you're a sniffer. And then Ingtar fucking dies.
So, R.I.P.
That's true.
Yeah.
Top 10
anime redemption arcs.
I would hesitate to tell people things if the last person I told something to just got murdered after I told them.
Yeah. I smell dead people. What?
Oh, yeah. I also hang out with a dead wolf all the time. He's my best
friend. He talks to me when I go to sleep in my mind's eye, in my brain hole. Yeah. One of the funnier ones too is like also,
that is another really bad communicator.
Yeah.
Literally Hopper, every single time that Perrin comes into the wolf dream, he's always just like, go home.
You're here too strongly, young bull.
I will not teach you anything. Just leave and go home. Mm. And Perrin's like, teach me, motherfucker. And Hopper's like, no, go home. And you're just like, Hopper.
I feel like Matt has more of an excuse to be a poor communicator because he has like zero self-awareness. Like Perrin and Rand are both much more self-aware people. So like you don't expect a lot out of Matt. You know, he's almost as unself-aware as Nynaeve. Like they're almost like mirror images of each other in the sense of like, oh, it's not like that at all. And I have no idea what's actually going on in my own mind because I'm utterly, you know, I have no depth or awareness of my own feelings or motivations of why I do anything. So, which
also Matt's gone for half a book, like right at the beginning. So like,
yes.
I mean, there's an entire book where he's not even there at all. So Matt.
Well,
I mean,
but like, I mean, gone.
Oh, not yeah, that's like fair. Gone. That's fair. God. But I mean, like, Matt, like, in terms of personalities, like, they all have very distinct personalities that all change in ways. But Matt seems to be, like, his personality pretty much remains overarching the same throughout the entire time, where it's just kind of, like, just fucking, not necessarily chill, but whatever happens, happens. And we'll just roll with it then. Roll with the punches. Roll with whatever happens. So, like, you know, we get funny miscommunications to him. Like, oh, do you want to play Maiden's Kiss? And he's like, I get to kiss a bunch of mazes. This sounds fantastic. And then he almost, like, dies.
But he still gets to make out with the maidens.
This is so true.
And it's kind of like.
I mean, he survived, so he's probably just, like, worth it.
Maiden's Kiss. I was going to say, if he had been bad at Maiden's Kiss, he might have just not been in the rest of the
movie. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Nicked himself less than he does shaving.
This is true. And then, like, the other funny one, obviously, you get the infamous Rand joke that none of the Isle get, and they're just like, what happened to the pond? He's like, that's not the point.
You've got to know what happened to the water. Yeah.
But the difference there is, like Rand actually cares whenever he doesn't get something correct about the Isle culture. And the Isle, they're just like, of course, you don't, you're not really Isle. You're a wetlander. You're not going to get it because you're all stupid.
But I want to be.
And then, so, like, whenever Rand tells the joke and none of the IL really get it, he's not just like, of course, you're not going to get it. Your IL, you're stupid. He's just like, that's a funny joke. But he doesn't really focus on it that long, you know. I mean, other than, you know, more so self loathing himself that he thought it was a funny joke and he failed, like, completely and epically. Well, not epically, it wasn't that good, but.
Snakes and Foxes just made an excellent point that Maiden hand talk might actually be the most best communication of all communication.
The most best. I want to slap you.
You heard me. Good.
Yeah, I mean, it.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
I mean, because it's got very defined, kind of like this means this. And we don't know enough about it to know if it includes things like sarcasm. Like we see all the times, so you can.
It does.
Does it?
Oh, I'm sure.
It does. It totally does. We do know that because we get the first POV that we get from Avienda. She's having this back and forth with Leah, who's girl who ends up getting left in Shatter Logoth, and they have this, you know, like snarky back and forth. And at the end, she signs to her that I have toe, and Leah signs back very small spear sister. And Avienda says to herself, she was grateful that she didn't give the hooked little finger at the end that would have made it sarcastic. Mm. And so, yeah, they totally have that much, you know. So, yeah,
good point.
Which is cool. I think that's so cool.
Good point.
I love it. Maiden hand talk is great. I'm looking forward to people making up what Maiden hand talk actually is, and I'm also not looking forward to it at all because people are stupid.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's going to go one of two ways. Either it's going to be great and I'm going to learn it and I'm going to be a dude who knows Maiden hand talk and I'll be able to use it at JordanCon and nowhere else. Or
the maidens will try to murder you.
It's going to be trash.
It's going to be like you go to like Comic-Con or something.
That it exists. Like, you know, Winter Dragon.
Like when you go to Comic-Con and like, oh, there's the people that fluently understand and can write like Klingon. And they're like talking like Klingon.
Yeah.
But at like JordanCon, you're just going to see like hordes of people just being like, or, you know, whatever. That I don't know what that means.
That's a whole conversation.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah, that's definitely what Maiden hand talk looks like.
That's a not safe for work sign.
Wait, you gotta throw on the hook at the end.
I'm serious.
If that's not sarcastic, then
I'm
that's
serious.
Offensive.
I can offend somebody. I can offend everybody within sight with one simple hand gesture.
Yes. Is bullshit. Yeah. I did not hit her. I did not.
Yeah.
Oh, hi, Mark.
So I do love when we do get closer to Rand after he's like, I'm going to kill myself. Wait, just kidding. I feel better than ever because I've compartmentalized everything in a section where I don't have to think about it and not actually got any help for any of my problems. And he finally goes and talks to Egwene and is like, yeah, you know the seals that are keeping the Dark One away from being able to actually do shit in the world? I'm going to break them. And then, like, Egwene is just, like, completely dumbfounded. Like, you're stupid, right? Like, you're joking,
Have you
right?
lost your goddamn
mind? He's just like, no, it's what needs to happen. It's what we're going to do. And then just fucking leaves. And it's like, I mean, you tried to tell somebody something, but you didn't tell her anything really other than what you were going to do. And then you just pieced the fuck out.
Which is terrifying. Yep.
I mean, ultimately it works out because of course it gets like all the groups together for the Dragon's Peace and, you know, sets the stage for Moraine's epic reentry of you're all morons. He's right. Do the thing. Sign it. Do it now. I will smite you. Sign it now. And then Avian is in the back. Oh, good. Can you include us, please? We don't all want to die. Include us. And then with the promise of like, oh, you'll include the Shanshan, right? Yes. And we never actually see it.
Sure.
I don't think.
I think we were supposed to see that later. I heard that he was going to continue to write about Matt and the Shanshan after, which was, I was hoping that that was a thing because I was very disappointed that Tuan didn't actually have any real character growth. And so I never learned to like her because like she never got to the point where she wasn't an asshole. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like I liked, you know, the plot device where Moraine had to come back in order to like get everybody to get along was a good plot device. And frankly, if Rand was, you know, purposefully making use of his understanding of the game of houses and knowing that Egwene would basically make sure that everybody else got to the field of Marilor to kind of get everybody in the big tent to get them at least talking, whether it was to be for or against the breaking of the seals, okay. But I don't feel like it was very well executed because having it come to a head with like a giant conflict when really, you know, I don't know, Daniel Green does a video about it where he kind of feels like it's overdone or it's not logical that they would have been, you know, butting heads quite so hard about it to the point where Moraine needs to come in and hose everybody down and be like, you know, chill out. And the only way I can see about that is I always kind of see Egwene, you know, watching the changes in Rand and becoming more and more alarmed at seeing him becoming a different person. But yeah, I don't know. I find that scene not written or executed as well as it could have been.
Well, to me, it really
centers around. Can I make a point?
Yeah, go for it.
Because if I don't, I can already tell now I'll forget. I can see it. I think I might would see it more realistic than maybe some other people would, because we've seen throughout history how many times people will resist an agreement and they'll completely ignore it and say, no, we're not going to do it. That actually benefits the overall ability to keep peace, to keep diplomacy, to keep things calm, all because they only see the parts of it that restrict what they can do as a nation, as a people, as whatever. You know, we've seen it plenty of times with the multitudes of peace talks that have gone on in the Middle East. And like, here's an agreement that helps everybody and everybody loses a little. And half of the people are like, yeah, we've been trying to compromise for the last like 100 years on something and it just never works. And the other half are like, no, we want to be able to build these things and research this. So fuck you. We're not doing it. So I could see it. But then again, it's like, to me, it's kind of like, taking them butting heads over something that seems like an obvious yes choice as somebody that is outside looking at the broad picture. Whereas if you're responsible for Tyr, you're only looking at the Dragon's Peace for where it benefits or restricts Tyr. And same for all the other nations and stuff. So yeah, I'm not going to say that that's a watered down look at it, because I think there's a lot of validity to the idea that they probably wouldn't butt heads as vehemently as they do. But I think it might be more understandable with a deeper understanding of it. Not saying that Daniel Green doesn't look deeply into things.
Sure.
Well, I need to go and watch the video to understand better because I haven't seen it.
That's another thing that I was going to say is that there's so much history between some of these nations that like it's, hey, we need to include the Aiel in the, you know, the Dragon's Peace. If you're carrying it,
no, they took you're our like, sword. Fuck those guys.
No, you don't go ahead and include the Aiel and the Dragon's Peace. That this is a Wetlander thing. Fuck the Aiel. The Aiel came in and trashed our shit and fucked us up. We hate them. We're never allowing them into this. And, you know, the Ilianers and the Tyrians and, you know, all of these just warring factions that have so much history and anger between them for each other. And just hearing that the other group will benefit often makes people very, as Andrew said, they stop being able to see the benefit for themselves and everybody else, because they start seeing that my enemies will benefit and I will be restricted mm-hmm. in some way. And I will absolutely say that this is another situation where Rand does a... It's interesting because Rand is coming off of the mount.
Sorry, I spent far too much time studying foreign policy.
Right? And so Rand comes down off the mountain and he is so emotionless in so many ways because he's compartmentalized everything. And so he's not doing a very good job of working with people's emotions and actually helping them understand how much it benefits like them personally. And he's not doing a very good job of actually like, you know, manipulating is not really the word that I'm looking for, but sort of explaining to the people why all of this is a good thing. He's basically just sitting there being like, dragon's peace. I'm going to tell you what it is. It's all on this document. Sign it or we lose the last battle. And everybody's like, whoa. Can we go over some of this shit that's in there? Because like the number of these things sound horrible. And Rand just goes, okay, cool. Last battle, though. And then they're like, yeah, but again, what do we do after the last battle? And he's like, last battle, though. So this is another opportunity where like Rand does a terrible job of communicating with people on their level because he's so above it at this point. And even though he's not really above it, I mean, he still sort of has to live in the world, presumably, if his plan actually works, you know, he actually still has to live in the world and whatnot. He's not thinking of that anymore. He's so at the point where he's just like, why would you not sign this? This is so stupid. Why are we having a conversation? Not really realizing that, again, so many emotions, so many histories, so many nations, so many different personalities are in this fucking tent at the same time. And Moraine coming in and actually talking to those people where they are is so much more of a like communication device and such. It's an opportunity where she shows how much more of a Game of Houses player she is and just how much more of an understanding human being she is. And I really appreciate that moment.
Yeah, I think she understands people a lot better than Rand does. Though at the point that he's in his Zen stage, it's like he's reached nirvana. And at that point he doesn't understand people. And he's doing this.
He's crossed too far to the other side.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, if you don't do this, I won't actually go fight the last battle, which is, you know, a total bluff because he will. And it's, you know, and I feel like it's not a perfect parallel because it's like the threat of the last battle or, you know, just the danger of the Dark One is so imminent at that point.
Oh, it's crushing.
And yeah. It's like people were able to ignore it for a while because they weren't having the bubbles of evil yet. They weren't having it all in your face. But after a while, you know, the seals were weakening enough and just the pattern was thinning enough that everybody's seeing the dead and everybody's, you know, having, you know, horrible, scary shit happen. And it's too obvious at that point. And so it's not as, you know, it's just so much more like, hey, we all need to be on the same page about this because it's such an existential threat. Whereas like in our world, something like, hey, we should all be, you know, on the same page about climate change or something. You know, we keep having things that let us know this is important, but it's not so in your face as, you know, monsters jump out of thin air and, you know, where it's real and obvious that this is the shadow and the last battle is coming and everybody should be on the same page because it's like really seriously important.
Is that what we need to do? I like that suggestion.
I don't know.
We just need to have climate change monsters that jump out in front of people.
Dude, I had to flee from fire this year and it was terrifying. You know, that was kind of a climate change monster. A
little bit, yeah.
So anyway, yeah.
No, it's insanity. In terms of I that scene is so, there's so much going on in that scene. It also it reminds me very much,
there's a lot going on.
It reminds me a lot of the other scene where Rodel Iteralde gets all of the lords of Tomenhead together. Mm-hmm.
To fight the Seanchan. And
they're also still standing there being like, yeah, the Seanchan is an existential threat, but I'm not fucking fighting with that guy. He's a piece of shit. But then, you know, Rodel walks in and he's like, I have a plan. And they're like, the little wolf has a plan. And then they're all behind.
I never thought I'd fight side by side with a Shannarin. How about a friend?
No. No, fuck you.
No. No. How about a meat shield? How does that sound?
There we go. I could live with that.
Yeah. So, Morgan, if you had to pick, and you can only pick one, the best communicator of the characters we see in the Wheel of Time, with absolutely no time other than, well, whatever time you've taken to maybe think about
like
it.
Like the main characters? Or
no, it can be any character.
One of the,
like, it would be fantastic if you picked a character we only see one time.
Characters.
Okay.
Like, pick the one innkeeper that only tells them how much food is and be like, it's fantastic.
Because the one off the top of my head, I figure, is probably Elaine. And I don't think that that's perfect because it comes to, like, you know, her communication when it comes to, like, with Rand or with boys or anything like that is absurd. But when it comes to actual, like, diplomacy or the ability to communicate with other people, when it's not just her, like, train wreck of a love life, she's good that way because she's trained to communicate well and she's trained to be diplomatic and she's trained to not be an asshole and to be able to give a little and that kind of stuff. So, but that was just what came off the top of my head because I was thinking of like the top main like eight characters or so.
As long as you can defend your answer, there are no wrong answers.
I could be friends with Elaine, and so I could defend that answer. She's one of the few that I could be friends with, and I could be friends with her because she's someone where you could be like, you're being an asshole and this is why, and she would be like, that's fair. And I can be friends with someone who you can do that with. So
I can be friends with her, but I'd never see her because she's always in the fucking bath. Like, I haven't seen you in like months. We just talked the other day. No, every time I come to see you, Lenny tells me that you're in the bath. I have to
talk you through the door. Like,
and they won't let me even near the bath because, you know, you're taken.
But
nobody
knows
by who because you're keeping it a secret. Suspicious.
Well, actually, that's not true. You might, if you were the captain of her guard, you might be able to go see her in the bath because she'd that's have true. To make the
pretense. I'd get to see her in the bath, so it'd be fine. But,
that's true. Yeah.
What about you, Daniel?
So mine's a little interesting because mildly the opposite reason, though still along the same lines of Elaine, and mine would be Birgitta. I would actually say that she is probably the best communicator because she doesn't, there are times where she saves face and saves feelings. It does happen in the books, but overall, she doesn't mince words with you. She doesn't sugarcoat things. She doesn't do—
when she's ready to party, whatever. She walks out of the house. Tonight, we're getting fucked up.
Basically. And she's going to be honest with you about what's happening and what she needs from you and what's going on. And, you know, while I definitely think that there are a number of times with humans where it's not necessarily the right thing to do emotionally and whatnot, to just tell somebody that they're being a piece of shit and that they need to go apologize to Matt, sometimes people need to hear that. And so as far as communication goes, I think she's extremely good at communicating. I think that she is very, very good at getting her point across. And at least with the people that she hangs out with, they also seem to really like being her friend. So she can't be that awful.
That's true. I like to think that, you know, that that Brigida and I, even though I'm terrible at archery, the few times I've done it, that we could, you know, if you could find, it would be a terrible combination given the modern, the status of America, and how like 80% of people in a bar don't seem like they can handle alcohol in a semi-dangerous situation. But if there was a place we could go and shoot archery and have a couple beers, I feel like we could totally chill. Yeah. And we could laugh at all the people that do wind up to shoot themselves or their buddy in the foot and they get carried out. So I feel like the and business wouldn't last very long. Too many insurance claims.
There's a
bar my face, she might even go for me.
There's a bar near my house where you can drink beer and throw axes.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. We have those here too in North Carolina. It's pretty dope. You got to go there early because if you stay too late, you might never, well, you might leave in a bag. So people are crazy. Yeah,
don't do that.
I think for mine, I would have to choose Ruark. And a big part of that is because to me, one of the biggest traits of being a good, effective communicator is knowing when to shut the fuck up. And Ruark is one of those, when he speaks, it's worth listening to. Everybody knows it's worth listening to. So you shut the fuck up and listen to him. Because if he doesn't, if it's not a situation where he needs to say anything, and I mean, you could make the same argument for Lon, they don't talk. They sit there, they listen, they observe. And then whenever they speak, it's something where, you know, as far as what they know and as far as what they see, they're talking based off of that. And you know that whatever they're saying is something that they haven't just sat there and be like, this is the first thing that came to head. Let me write it down in a letter. Oh, that one was too harsh. Let me write another letter that says the exact opposite. I mean, because every time Ruark speaks, literally nobody tries to talk over Ruark. Like, the closest person that tries is Rand, and even Rand pretty much avoids it.
No, that's so nice. Like
that. Might be a bit of a cop-out answer, just because
everybody
loves Ruark, and if you don't love Ruark, you're worse than a dark friend.
Picking someone who's older is a good, you know, a good choice, because being older doesn't necessarily mean that you're a good communicator, because being older doesn't necessarily mean that you grow, but for people who grow and learn, and learn from their mistakes,
you more can be, opportunity to do so is helpful.
All right, so I agree with that. Let's flip the question around, and Daniel,
right, you go first.
We're not flipping around the direction that way. I'm asking the question, so I don't have to go first.
Damn it, worst, he always does this.
Worst communicator in the time, and because there's so many, we'll keep it to one. Looking at time, I was going to say you could give two, but we'll keep it to one.
Gallant. Oh wait, are you going first?
Yeah, we're gonna go with Daniel first.
Oh, sorry, Dan.
Oh no, you're fine.
So I know that the obvious answer is Gawain, and I will let Morgan have that one because it already started. And
if you couldn't choose Gawain, can you think of another one, Morgan?
Probably. If I have some time, let Dan.
Well, no,
as Daniel talks, I was gonna say like we could all I think agree that Gawain is probably the worst.
Okay,
probably. But I would actually say that Elida is actually my worst communicator. Granted, I will also say that that is a little bit of a cop-out, and I will say that for most of the time that she is Amarlin, she is actually having her communication messed with by someone else. And so I get that. And I'm not, you know, totally throwing her under the bus for all of that. But there are so many times in her being the Amarlin where she actually surrounds herself with smart people. And then they make her mad and she eliminates them from her circle. And that is so much against what a good communicator does. Because you have less information, you have less communication, and you have less counsel when you do that. And so many times, I mean, like over and over again, when they talk about her sitting room in her study, there's less chairs and less chairs and less stools there because somebody has pissed her off and she's kicked them out of her inner circle. And so I would say that Elida is probably, if she had actually done better about getting information and using it and communicating with those people who needed that information, I think she would have been a way more successful Hammerlin than she was, because she was trash, partially because she couldn't get messages to who she needed to.
I'm actually going to counter you on that one. I'm going to counter you on that one. I think that Elida is actually a very good communicator, because she led the charge in the hall to get Suwon. I'm going to say her name wrong, but Leanne.
Liana.
There you go. Liana removed from their positions as Keeper of the Chronicles and the Hammerlin seat. I think that a lot of what you're saying, and this is like personal like view on it, I think that falls more under being a very bad leader rather than a very bad communicator, because she's very good up until she starts being manipulated by her Keeper of the Chronicles of communicating exactly what she wants and getting it passed and getting it pushed through. A lot of that she does with brute force and strong arm tactics, but as far as communicating, I'm not saying that part is. Sure. I'm saying the communication is what she actually puts out there. She is very effective at putting out their statements to get a lot of Aes Sedai to come back to the tower, believing that everything is fine. When they get there and they find out everything's not fine, she's very effective at getting that disseminated across the board. She's a very convincing and charismatic speaker to get everything done in the hall to get Suwon and L removed. So as far as the pure basics of communication and what the communication accomplishes, I think that she's effective, but I think she is a very bad leader, which a lot of bad leaders are really bad at communicating. So I'm not saying she's the best, but maybe pre-Hammerlin, Elida is a really good communicator, and post-Hammerlin, it's all power to the head and she becomes really bad.
I will throw out there that she's unable to get a sheep herder kept in the royal palace as the queen's right hand. So I feel like her effective communication is very much undermined already from early on.
She also doesn't tell them who he is. So
she doesn't communicate.
Yeah, that's one instance. Getting the queen of a country to keep a seemingly nobody commoner that climbed the grounds to stay, versus getting the third ever that we know of, Hammerlin, deposed of her seat along with her Keeper of the Chronicles. To me, that one, the getting them deposed is way higher.
Sure, but it's also not nearly as hard when you already have people who are enemies of the person that you're trying to get deposed. Who would see her thrown out.
We should do an episode on the rise of power for Elida.
Sure.
It'll be fun. Anyway,
all right,
Morgan, do you have one besides Duck Sauce Packet Boy?
Duck Sauce Packet Boy. Well, I mean, you could pick any of the Forsaken, but if I was going to pick someone besides the Forsaken, and it would depend on the Forsaken, Nynaeve. Nynaeve is a really bad communicator. She's bad at even figuring herself out. And she weaponizes her temper and basically uses it to bludgeon people. And so
let the hate flow through you.
She's not. She communicates that she's mad. So I don't feel like she's particularly good at it. She has instances where she communicates well, but for the most part, she doesn't do a good job of figuring out within herself why she does what she does, because you have to know why you're doing what you're doing or what your ultimate goal is before you can communicate that to other people. And she is so much ruled by her feelings. I think she's poor at communicating.
Yeah, I would agree with that. All right, Andrew. You've had long enough to think.
Yeah, you know, you say that.
You hadn't interrupted me. You might have actually.
I didn't interrupt you. I waited till you finished.
Sorry. You're right.
You fucking number five McAsshole meal.
Ooh,
I don't know where that came from.
I've called the number four before.
Oh, never. Not a number five. Been escalated or downgraded. Depends on how you view the scale.
What you got?
What I was trying to think, like, initially I wanted to say Eamon Valda. Because he doesn't do, I think I can still make a fair argument, because part of the argument does stand the risk of sounding hypocritical with how I just countered Elida to some degree, by making the statement of effectiveness doesn't, like, getting things done and effectiveness doesn't necessarily equate with being a good communicator whenever what you're doing doesn't require the collective agreement or communication amongst people, right? So even Valda, as the leader of the White Cloaks, what he says is what happens. But he's so bad at even swaying some of the most fanatical fanatics in the series to his side that very quickly after he attains the role of Lord Captain Commander, there's a mutiny and he loses. And everybody's like, oh, Galad's in charge now? Yeah, that's fine. We'll follow Galad. It makes sense. We don't really like you that much, Valda, in here. Yeah, he's way prettier. And, you know, he doesn't talk to us as harshly as you do. And, you know, he's a number six McAssel meal. So, yes. Which is either better or worse. You know, what? Put it wherever it belongs.
It's worse.
Yeah.
Therefore, I feel better about being called a number five.
There you go. Because he's one of those
I was up there with Aemon Valda. Fuck yeah. That guy.
His communication is a lot like Nynaeve's style. When she's angry, she just shouts what she wants. And if you don't agree, you're like, the spawn of Shaitan. Yeah. Except for them, like, yeah. Oh, you don't agree? You're a dark friend. And we're going to hang you in the Dome of Truth or somewhere. Yes, Queen Morghese, you are definitely free to go. Oh, we need you over here. Oh, we're going to casually walk you by these people that we're hanging that we're definitely not going to help you escape.
Wink.
Wink. Yeah, it's bad. Yeah. It's bad.
It's bad. It's bad stuff. But, cool. So, definitely, my final thoughts on this are, one of the things that, again, I always come back to is the realism. I really appreciate that with some exceptions, because every universe is going to have a few exceptions. The ones that have less exceptions are the better ones. I do actually feel like the vast majority of people stick with their character and do or do not communicate well based on who they are and who they've been described to be. And so for the vast majority of people, I can understand why they're not talking to each other when they don't, and others are talking to each other when they do. And that's one of the things that I've always loved about the series, that, you know, sometimes it, in other books or other movies, it feels like there's conflict for conflict's sake. And in The Wheel of Time, it feels like conflict is natural and just very much a part of what happens when you get 2,500 characters in a universe together. And I've always appreciated that, but there are definitely some people and some situations where I just shake my head, because it's like, would you just, if you took 5 minutes, 5 minutes of your time, you could solve so many of your problems to just not, you have enough to worry about with the shadow. You don't need to make it worse by not fucking talking to each other. So I think that Robert Jordan does a really good job with communication throughout most of the books, though, as we have already stated a few times, there are certain characters where you're just like, bruh, don't.
Yeah, I mean, I think to give my final thoughts, and they'll be brief because a lot of it would just be restating what Daniel and Morgan have already said. You know, Morgan, I think you were the first to mention it during this episode, that it does, for the most part, at least, all of it feels very, very organic, very real. That, hey, yeah, I could see this. I've gotten, you know, when I was in like middle school, I've gotten those contradictory letters of, yeah, you know, you're cute. What are you doing this weekend? And they got the other one. Hey, so I'm actually really busy this weekend. And I'm just like,
wait, what? Fuck?
And then had the friend that comes up like, oh no, she actually likes you. She's just really shy about it. And, you know, kind of bailed with another letter. I'm just kind of like, why are women so complicated? Where's Tyler? Tyler understands these people. And, you know, I go back and, you know, I read The Wheel of Time, or reread The Wheel of Time, and I'm like, Yeah, I can get that. I can understand. I can relate to that. And that's something that Robert Jordan does such, and Brandon Sanderson, Brandon Sanderson do such a good job of, is making the stuff believable for the most part and relatable. And I think that's a big chunk of what makes the series so popular, so successful, and why you can get podcasts where three random weird loser guys talk about the Wheel of Time for an hour and a half or so every week. You know, and all the other podcasts where they have, you know, much better hosts like Morgan and, you know, literally almost anybody else. The Tate's our brand, so, you know, don't infringe on it. You know, you can be crappy another time. This is our time to be crappy.
Yeah. All right, Morgan, what are your final thoughts on general communication?
Well, I think you're right that it's very realistic. I appreciate his characterization because he writes from logic. He gets into people's heads and it's just very much this train of logically, what would someone do? Logically, what would happen in a situation like this? And the point of even sometimes people don't act logically and people are irrational sometimes. And so when people do things that don't make a lot of sense, even that is logical in its own way. And so I appreciate it because almost everything that people do is real. And there are times when I feel like the writing is inaccurate, but I only feel like it's inaccurate because he has strongly characterized someone. And then I feel like he doesn't hit their characterization, and that it's very rare. There are only a handful of times where I'm kind of like, I feel like this didn't quite hit the mark. And with the communication issues, I just feel like that's so realistic. And at the point that we are in 2021, we're so much better at it. You know, it's just sort of like, you don't communicate well, go to therapy. You know, you need to learn how to talk to people. You know, and I feel like we're just a better world for it. Maybe that's partly the internet and everybody just talking to each other so much more. But yeah, I think that it's definitely so understandable and relatable.
I don't know. I feel like a boomer when I talk about like the way communication has gone with the advent of texting and Twitter and Facebook and all that, you know, the Twitter.
Nobody
and the
Facebook speaks face to face anymore. Book of face,
yeah. To some extent, I say as I continuously text people all the time and that kind of stuff. I think you lose out on certain things, of course. I mean,
sure.
You're always going to lose out on things and gain things no matter what the thing. Nothing is all encompassing.
I don't disagree with you. I've been doing so much Zoom lately since like over the past year, and that is so much more engaging, I guess.
Yeah, because really, if you say something it. I hate and I roll my eyes, you can see it and call me an asshole right there to my face.
Exactly.
Please do. Nuance. Yeah. If you're talking and I say and I like just roll my eyes, yeah, do feel free to call me out. Anybody, go for it. Indeed. I dare you. No, I'm just kidding.
Do it.
But yeah, so Morgan, thank you so much for agreeing to come on to the Black Tower podcast. It's a risk that many people have made the mistake of taking. So much to our benefit. It's really great to have you here. So before we close out this episode, make sure that everybody knows where they can find you and listen to your amazing content.
Oh, yeah. So I'm on Twitter at Warder Gray. That's Gray with an E. And there's a link to my podcast there, link to my Discord, link to my Patreon. If you put in for Podcast of the Dragon, you might find me, you might not. If you look up Wheel of Time Podcast Morgan, I will pop up. So if you can't find me like under my regular podcast name, you can definitely find me like that. And yeah, I'm a little bit different. I'm kind of topical oriented like you guys, but I do it all by myself. So I'm a little bit more kind of script oriented, and I put myself through a lot of hard work for some reason to do this to myself, and it's fun. So yeah. Yeah.
We don't know anything about that.
Who makes a podcast?
I know, right? It's so much unnecessary work.
I know. It's stupid.
But the topic-based podcast, we're slowly going to take over because you can't be first-time readers forever.
Not with that attitude.
Yeah.
All right, this week we're going to go ahead and do our podcast on the third word in the first chapter of The Great Hunt. So when they say it, what do you think?
The third word is of.
Is it?
Yeah.
Did you just look it up?
No, it just says
the will of.
Oh.
How every book starts. Anyway.
Well, it was the first chapter, not the proper.
Anyway, all of the links to Morgan's Twitter, to Morgan's podcast, the podcast of the Dragon, and whatever other links I find that are definitely your stuff. I'm not going to like randomly link somebody else's stuff. It'll be down in...
Link the Mario podcast.
Find that hentai again. So, keep getting someone posting.
You go to hentaihaven.org. Why do I know that website?
Because they keep posting in my Discord. Someone had to finally tell me how to like go in and shut them off. So,
gross.
Yeah, so there'll be plenty of links down to Morgan's stuff in the show notes if you're just listening to the podcast, and in the description if you are being super kind and watching us on the YouTubes. For watching us on YouTube, make sure that you click that nice red subscribe button, turn it gray so that you can suck the life out of its world, I guess, because that's why things turn gray. Sure, why not? I don't know. It's a good thing for us. Do it. Why not?
We appreciate it.
Yeah, and if you want to get notifications whenever new videos pop up beyond the multitude of discords that I most of the time actually post, it's there. Yeah, hit the little bell thing somewhere down there. It does a thing, and I don't understand YouTube. I just click videos and watch them and click upload. The absolute bare minimum effort of editing.
I still don't know how to do that part, so you know, I'm learning.
I just click studio and then it says upload video and I click that. And then I clickety clack on the keyboard and make some words and sometimes it helps. I actually use TubeBuddy. So if like the SEO with the tags is really bad, it tells me you suck. And so I try to revamp some of the tags. But it's cool because if you have TubeBuddy, you can go and look at other people's videos and see what their SEO is like. And the results may surprise you for some videos. But so go do that. Of course, you can find links to our Twitter, Facebook, all that kind of stuff on our website, blackjarpod.com. If you don't feel like going there, looking forward to clicking one of the links below, there are links to all of our social media stuff down below as well as the Patreon and the Crystal Barista, the greatblight.com, new creations by Jen.
Plug life.
Yeah. And that's it, because I think the other one we put there is ours. Yeah. Anyway, go and look down below. You're all capable of reading, I would assume, if you were able to find this video. And if you're not, just click stuff until you find what you want. You can do it. We believe in you. And we will see you next week. Yeah, probably next week. But again, Morgan, thank you so much for being here. It's fantastic. Always a pleasure. We've talked a few times in the past, at least a few times, and look forward to interacting many, 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 many more times in the future.
Yeah, for sure.
So for those of us here at the Black Tower podcast, I have been Andrew.
I have been Daniel. Josh is here in spirit, and we hope that you're having a great morning or whatever time of day it is that you're listening to us or watching us on your computer, tablet, phone, whatever. And in case we don't see you again, good afternoon, good evening,